The sun is shining. I'm here in Wexford in the southeast of Ireland. Hello, everybody. You're very welcome to episode 24 of Out the Gap, the Irish food and farming podcast.
Yeah, we're just after arriving here now, Noel. This is a field of Planet spring barley, and it's destined for the Malton market.
Yep.
For Guinness. But that's all things being equal, and providing that the proteins, I suppose, are low enough and that type of thing. But that can often be in the hands of the gods, really, because you do what you can do, and it's sort of weather dependent after that, then, to be honest.
And the sun is shining here, so we're just after passing up the road from Ballyroebuck National School. We're actually in Parish of Ballyroebuck in Wexford, is that correct?
That's right, yeah, we're in Ballyroebuck. It actually would be the parish of Kilrush. It's a Kilrush Askamore is the parish. But yeah, as I say, the town's land is Ballyroebuck, all right. But where we are here in all, I suppose, it's like a lot of Irish, I suppose, parishes and that. It's we've town's lands, you know, they're quite small and all, there's only a few families where we can walk into another town's land very quickly. Yeah, as I say, it's just the way it is around here, I suppose.
And it is really today, it is the sunny southeast. I suppose people are always see advertised on the roadsides and whatever, these Wexford strawberries for sale and Wexford potatoes. So it is, I suppose, it's the opposite area there. A few months ago, we did a podcast up in the Burn in Clare on the west coast, and now we're down the southeast. So this is the total opposite of the Burn, the ground around here, the soil, everything. It's a kind of famous area, I suppose, gets a bit more sunshine than our area. And I suppose that's why it's so, I suppose, full of crops.
Yeah, that's it, Noel. Now, I have a good friend of mine actually lives in Mayo, and when he comes down to visit here, he comes down a couple of times a year, you know. He says we're like the south of France, but I think he was just lucky on the times he came, like you are today, Noel. You know, we do get all types of weather, but definitely I think we are a little bit luckier than most, all right. So it suits definitely cereal cropping, you know.
And I suppose so. I should say that I'm talking to Patrick Keogh. And Patrick, how long have your family been, I don't know, I'm calling it Keogh. I know there's Keogh and there's Kehoe. So
yeah.
How long have your family been farming around here?
Yeah, I suppose it's you'd be forgiven for pronouncing it Kehoe, because I suppose it's the way we spell it, you know, but I suppose we do call it Keogh. I'd be the third generation farmer here. We would have moved over from a few miles away back, I suppose. We'd be talking, I suppose, maybe 150 years ago now at this stage, you know. So we're well used to the area.
And it's noticeable coming down. We're walking up through the crop here, but it's noticeable as I was driving down this morning, when I come into, I crossed the border from Carlow into Wexford, and it's noticeable that, I suppose, a lot of very few dairy cows around this area, and very noticeable how much sheep, suckler cows and tillage crops there was in the area.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, it goes like that around here, definitely, Noel. I could bring you a few miles over the road now and you'll see a lot more black and whites, you know, grazing. But definitely the pocket we're in here, I think it's more suitable. It's a lighter type of soil and that, and it's really suited to, I suppose, malt and barley, really. Yes. Because, as I say, it's just a lighter type of soil, and you're more inclined to get it to pass for brewing, or if you're lucky enough, distilling even, you know.
What is your official title here now, Patrick? Are you Director General or Managing Director of the operation, or what would you call yourself?
I don't know.
Operations Manager.
That's it. The CEO of the company. Yeah. I do be called a lot of things all now, to be honest, but sure.
So what are we? So we're looking, I suppose. I suppose the crop we are in at the moment there, Patrick, it's about what? Is it about 2 foot high from the base of the ground, maybe?
Yeah, it probably isn't, all I'd say. You're getting very close to that now, all right. It's this year, because everything worked so well, Noel, it wasn't even down to my management, really. It was down to Mother Nature, I think. The crop utilised everything that was put on it, basically, from fertiliser to chemical. Everything just worked, I suppose, like that you really would want it to work out. So for that reason, it will possibly need a shortener spray now very, very shortly. I might go with the likes of a Turple. It's just basically, Noel, so the crop won't lie over, and it'll be just very difficult to harvest it, you know. So brilliant to see it so strong, but it's probably too strong.
The shortener actually stunts the growth of the plant.
Exactly, Noel. The shortener, it just basically slows down the growth big time, and you're more inclined to keep it'll strengthen up the base of the crop, and you're more inclined to keep it standing right up to harvest date. So it's it's very important, Noel. I suppose, look, if the crop does end up, as you know, Noel, totally flat on the ground, it's a total disaster. The sunshine can't fill the grains, and you just won't yield, basically. You leave it all on the ground, you know.
And I suppose your business, growing crops, etc., you know, you have some stock on the farm, we'll talk about that later, but your business here, growing crops, is particularly weather, I suppose we're all, anybody in farming is weather dependent, but you're probably particularly weather dependent.
Yeah, yes, you definitely are, and all, you know, right down to, I suppose, back in 2018, if you remember, and all, I think it affected most of the country at this stage. That terrible drought, I hate talking about it.
There was a terrible spring and then a terrible drought, yeah.
That's correct, yeah. So, looking all, I suppose that affected all of us. We were lucky that year that prices were fairly decent and it ironed over some of the cracks a little bit.
Yes.
But I suppose if we were to get a bad price on that year and all, I think it would have destroyed a lot of farmers, especially lads that were maybe renting land and that type of thing, because the yields were just way, way down, you know. I wouldn't have really been covering costs, really. As I say, not that we made much money,
yes,
but we got our bills paid and we got out. You know, we turned a small few pounds, but as I say, if the prices had been bad on that year, all right, it would have really shown, it would have shown up how important climate is, you know.
And as we look around this field, to me, and I'm no expert on corn, but it looks quite even a crop. It's quite level in height, generally speaking. So I presume that the fact is fairly uniform, I presume, is a good thing.
It is, Noel. Yeah, definitely. No, I'm very happy with this crop now. As you can see, some yellow on the leaves there, Noel, yes, if we get down close and look in the crop.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of BYDV, a bit of barley yellow dwarf virus.
Yes.
Which is, what happens is, if it can land on it, and what to do is they infect the crop. And this, if you'll notice driving the roads around this year, it's nearly everywhere across the board. You can put on an aphicide early on, to try and, I suppose, what would you say, Noel, to try and help the crop a little bit. But the thing is, you're not guaranteed it's going to work, really. There's so many different types of aphids, and I'm no expert on them. But you can spray for aphids, Noel, but you mightn't necessarily kill the type of aphid you have, if you know where I'm coming from.
Yes.
So,
and even to look at some of those now, you can see a little bit of rust, or what looks like to me, like to describe it, I suppose, to the listeners, is kind of a little bit, looks like a kind of a rusty colour on the yellowed leaf, isn't
that's
it?
That's right. I think, Noel, once they infect it, really, it's sort of, for all the world, Noel, I suppose, when they put the infection into it, then it's more susceptible to picking up other things as well. As you can see, there is a little bit of yellow on here. It's not something nothing I can really do about now at this stage, but it's not something I'm too worried about either, to be honest.
And when did you sow this crop?
This crop would have been sown, I think it was on the 19th of March, Noel.
And like, as we look at this crop, when do you expect this to start, the ears to start appearing on this?
Yeah, this crop now is, I'm just looking here now, Noel. As you can see, the flag leaf is coming out here. This crop would be ready, or very, very close to being ready now, to put on the turple or the shortener spray that I just mentioned earlier. By next weekend, I'm expecting the awns to be appearing. And if they appear, Noel, it's too late for any shortener spray. You're just going to hamper...
So you need to get while still actively growing, really.
You need to get it,
really.
There's a very, very small window on that.
Yeah.
So you just... Timing is everything, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you spend a lot of time now, down like we are now, on your knees, looking with your head bent into the crop, looking at...
No,
I presume
not,
there
not
must be a good bit of that, is there?
But there is, I suppose, because now and all, and especially this year, I suppose we can blame it on the pandemic, we can blame it on Brexit, we can blame it on a lot of different things, but with inputs where they are, I suppose it's never been as important to keep a close eye on crops, because, you know, a week can pass, and if you get unusual weather trends, maybe enough or too much rain, whatever, you just, the goalposts keep moving on you.
Do you walk the crops then very regularly?
I would. And I'm, as I say, by no means an expert at all, Noel. I do need outside advice as well, which is very important, but...
And did you, when you were in your dating days now, would you have brought perspective? You wouldn't have brought anyone up through the barley now for a look at, for a prospective aphicide application or anything like that. I suppose it wouldn't be the most exciting, I suppose.
No. I might have tried it and all, but it didn't work out very well for me.
And we're heading, it's quite, even though, as I say, for an area that's quite fertile now, there's quite a lot of little hills around, isn't there? As we look around us, we're nearly surrounded by low hills, aren't we?
We are. We definitely are and all. Yeah, the pocket we're in here at the moment, we're sort of, what would you say, we're surrounded really by hills, you know, so that's some of the reason you probably have noticed all the wind turbines and all.
Which would be the big change since you were a boy around here.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. I suppose the last 10 to 12 years and all, really, they appeared, you know, so...
Yeah, they're noticeable, because I was just thinking this morning, we would have come down here years ago as children, that's the one thing that's different now, I suppose, is that saw a lot of turbines as you're coming into the area.
Exactly. But now, personally, as I say, everyone has their own view and that on it, but personally, I don't have any, so I've no, I suppose, vested interest in it, but... I do think they're just an important part of what we're doing now at the moment. And
this, you know, is your predominant crop, one of your main ones, is the malt and barley?
It has been, yeah, over the last number of years, because there is a premium there and all. You know, if you're lucky enough to get it to pass for Molson, like...
Yeah, the protein, is it? Is the protein the
protein,
big one?
Yeah. And now, as I say and all, there can be other... there can be other things, depending on what year and all, there can be... And what type of weather we get in that. Sometimes there can be skinning of grains. There can be... what would you say? The list can really go on of problems.
You're saying, you're listing out these things that can go wrong with the crop. If your crop doesn't meet the criteria then for malt and barley, you at the mill or whatever, you bring in it, you presume the sequence is it gets tested, and then they say, Patrick, sorry, it's not up to standard, or the weather hasn't favoured you, or whatever.
Yeah.
So where does it go then, into feed barley?
Exactly, Noel. If it doesn't pass for the criteria, then it goes to the feed heap. Exactly. And that can be for a number of things. I suppose if your moisture is a little high, as I say, and all.
And that could be down to weather at harvest time, not enough sun.
Exactly. It could be totally out of your control, Noel. It could be that your protein is a small bit high. As I say, it could be the skinning of grains and possibly a few other different things in between as well.
And we're dealing, we'll walk up along here, but you're dealing with a natural growing item, I suppose, so, or you're dealing with a natural plant, so I suppose you're never going to have an exact, to be able to walk into the field here in July or August and say, or July and say, the whole 100% of this field is ready for harvest, like, isn't it? It's not an exact science, so you're just looking for what, a high percentage of the crop?
Yes, exactly, Noel, yeah, absolutely. Like, you might come in onto a headland here, you could be often fooled because you'd say, oh, that crop is maybe a week off still. But as you know, Noel, like, no matter how careful, I suppose, the farmer is, there's going to be a certain amount of overlap on, say, chemical, on fertiliser and that type of thing, and that can retain its green colour a bit longer. Yes. So I suppose when you walk out into the field then, Noel, you might see it a lot riper once you get off the headlands. And you just have to make the call then, I suppose, Noel. Maybe just even bring in the combine. I'm lucky enough to have my own here. It's an oldish machine, but I can just come in, Noel, and cut a sample. And if I'm not happy, then I can just bring it back to the shed. But what happens is, I suppose, in a lot of scenarios nowadays, if the contractor comes in with a big, big machine, Noel, you know, in fairness, you can't really blame him. He's going to want to wipe it out because he'll have so many lads shouting down the phone to him. So you can't be... chopping and changing.
And the malt and barley, so, and what are we talking difference in price wise roughly? I know there's different things like forward contracts and everything, but if your grain, let's say per ton, goes towards animal feed rather than, and doesn't meet the standard for malt and barley, what are we talking then? What kind of a difference would you be talking, generally speaking?
Yeah, it's a good question, Noel. It can vary a lot now. Like, you know, you're probably talking maybe somewhere between 30 and 40 euro a ton of a premium over feed. This year, because things are so unusual, Noel, with the war and with prices looking quite good, as I say, obviously we don't wish any of that problem on Ukraine, like, you know, and the war and that type of thing, but it's definitely after bringing prices of per ton up here at the moment. Now, whether it'll stay or not, I'm not so sure, but it looks like it's going to be quite a good good price there per ton. So I'm not sure if the differential between the malt and feed is going to be as much as other years, but we're sort of guessing maybe 30, 35 a ton of a premium.
Okay, so it's a big difference, really.
It is a big difference, especially over the last number of years, I suppose. Even seed genetics have come on so much. Like, you really would be, I suppose, striving there for, I suppose, somewhere between three and a half ton per acre. So if you work that out, I suppose, Noel, it does, it adds up a good bit. Like, you know, you're probably talking maybe overall maybe 100 per acre and all of a of a premium, there or thereabouts, which
this is a big lot.
As I say, it's a lot.
And
really,
it can all hasp on maybe a good dry week in July, whether it comes or not at the right time.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That's, you know, I suppose, like, it's like playing Russian roulette with your business, really. You know, you're going all in, like, you're like a high roller's table, really. You're going all in, Noel. And if Mother Nature doesn't play ball for that week, week and a half, Noel, it can be soul destroying stuff, and it can do a lot of damage to your
and
overall.
So we're going to stroll up a bit further and see some of the other crops that you're growing as well. Which direction are we heading in now?
Now, if you like, Noel, we can head back out towards the gate if you like. I've probably no more other crops to show up here, so
Okay, that's fine.
Head back towards the gate, Noel.
Now, Patrick, so we're into what looks to me like into another field here of a similar enough barley again. So what is this crop we're on, and what's the difference? Obviously you've been through it recently because there's tramline marks here with the tractor.
That's correct, Noel. Yeah, I would have been through it here, I suppose, about 2 weeks ago with the sprayer. We were putting on at the time a fungicide just to keep the crop clean, basically, not let disease get into it. And we were also putting out some weed spray. So just basically trying to better the crop, really, and not let weeds and that smother it out, you know. So it's the same crop as we had been in previously. It's Planet Spring Barley, and it's destined for the malt and barley contract as well, if things work out and all, and my proteins and all are all okay. So
you were saying there a minute ago that you think this crop is a little bit ahead of the other in that colour. It's not as affected, maybe. It's maybe not any higher or anything or thicker, but it's maybe the colour is better, you were saying.
That's right, Noel. It would have got the very same treatment as the field alongside here, but it would have had some forage rape in it over the winter, and it just does prevent leach and maybe some of the fertilisers and whatever else maybe washing away. So our hands are being forced a little bit from the powers that be in the department and that, for I suppose predominantly Europe really is forcing us to do it. But I think it's a good, I think it is a good thing really overall, Noel.
Yeah, doing away with this idea of having like traditionally this bare ground over the winter or whatever, that's kind of gone now basically, isn't it?
Exactly.
Once the crop is harvested, you have to plant in some kind of a cover crop to hold the soil structure of the winter. Is that the...
That's right. And I just only this week, Noel, heard of that regulations there, Noel. I think within 7 days of harvest now,
it's tricky, isn't it?
Very tricky, Noel, because it's a time of the year where I suppose it can be a bit challenging. I would have liked to see that window a bit bigger because...
It's very short, I thought.
Yeah, you're sort of going around the clock that time of the year to, I suppose, your most important job is to save the crop, basically. And then you're trying to get straw out of the way and all. You have a very short window to be able to get back in with the next crop or to cultivate your stubble and that type of thing. So I do think that's going to have to be revisited and all, to be honest. I think that's not given enough time.
It sounds very short.
It's
hard to see how anyone could get, at that busy time, how anyone could get in and get that done in 7 days, really. Get everything done to meet there. You would wonder. But so you're using the sheep then as a kind of a... You're nearly back to, I suppose, years ago when farms were less specialised. This was when those mixed farms, maybe a bit of dairy, small dairy herds, a few sheep.
That's right.
A small maybe crop of oats, and they were doing father beet or whatever. So there was a big mix, so it was... They complemented each other in their own way, didn't they?
Yeah.
Whereas now people went a bit more specialised, I suppose.
Absolutely, Noel. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think we'd... Look, I'll put my hand up and say, I think we all probably lost our way a little bit, all tillage farmers at least. What was happening there before that tree crop rule came in there from Europe, again, I think that's working extremely well.
Which is a mixture of crops rather than just this monoculture the whole time, continually.
Exactly, Noel, yeah. So I suppose on our farm now, and it wouldn't be, we're not on a massive farm now, right, but it'd be a typical enough size farm, we'd be growing a tree crop system. So we'd be spring barley this year, we have winter barley, and we have some spring beans as well. We hadn't sold beans for the last number of years, had nothing against them, Noel. It just didn't fit into our rotation. Our cereals, because we tried to get in between 30 and 40 acres of forage rape, so the New Zealand Romney flock then can run around on that over the winter, and it's, as I say, it just...
And I
to work
ground,
well together.
This ground here, I presume, doesn't get mucky in the winter, really, would it not?
No, it's quite free-draining soils, Noel.
So it's ideal then for the sheep.
It does work well now, to be fair. It does work well, Noel, absolutely. I know if we got maybe terrible conditions, obviously. Like, you know, obviously if we've got real adverse weather conditions, things can go wrong in that, but we're usually quite lucky here. As I say, it's very free-draining, and we'd work a strip grazing system on it. It doesn't always work, Noel. There's always a few escape artists, but we try to keep them onto fresh ground fairly regular so they're not poaching, you know.
And do you try and mix them between spring and winter crops as well?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I try to get in, I suppose
to explain that, I suppose you might explain the difference for people who are not sure. What does he mean? Is every crop not planted in spring? It's quite unusual if you describe winter crops that they have to actually be sown in colder weather rather than...
True.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Yeah. You might explain a bit about that.
Yeah, I suppose the winter barley here, Noel, goes in this area, ideally around mid to late October. We're afraid to go in much sooner, Noel, for a number of reasons there. You're more susceptible to getting more disease. You might have to go with extra chemical and that type of thing. So we like the weather to be cooler, putting that in. You don't want that crop to get too strong over the winter, really, because it's just more susceptible to picking up all sorts of infection. So I think most of our winter cropping was sold between the 20th and 25th of October. So because it's sown earlier, Noel, it's usually cut around mid to the 20th of July. And it's ideal then for getting in and putting in your forage crop, because it's got a head start. I'd have that up and running in an ideal world before I'd start harvesting the spring crops. So it's another job out of the way as well. And you're moving your harvest dates.
Yes, you have a variety of harvests. It's not all coming
exactly,
in at one time.
Exactly. As I say, labour units is quite small here, and we're doing nearly all the work myself here at the moment. So for that reason as well, Noel, it works well that I don't have too many acres to try and harvest at the same time, if you know what I mean. It just spreads the workload a little bit.
Yeah.
And if we get bad weather, at least, Noel, we have a better chance of saving it, you know. Yeah.
No, that's great. And we're going to go see the beans, which will be your protein crop. We're going to see them in a minute, aren't we?
That's right, we will. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So you plan, what date are we now? We're nearly into June. What date do you plan this field to plant it? Do you think this field then will be slightly ahead of the one we were just in? The neighbours now are looking in at Patrick, you're wondering why is he so well dressed today?
That's it. They think I'm after losing my marbles all.
It's a bit of a lot of a crowd here now and then.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd really get the neighbours talking, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
A few deck chairs.
If I had a newer Jeep now, it might stand out a bit more.
On this crop now, because it's the spring crop, Noel, we're probably talking more so mid-August on this one. Mid-August on this one, and probably more the 20 July on our winter crops as well.
You'd be nearly a month later, give or take, would you?
You probably would, as I say now, Noel, and I could get sort of shot for saying that, because really...
Unless it's a spectacular period of weather and rain and sun and whatever,
exactly.
It could drive it on.
And I have seen probably, Noel, over the last number of years where if you do happen to get really, really good harvest weather, oftentimes, Noel, you're only just maybe finished your winter harvest when it rolls into the spring, but... Yeah. There is usually a few weeks there of a gap, like, you know.
Right, I'll follow your lead. So here we'll go on our next adventure. Yeah, Grant.
Yeah.
We're here, Patrick, the sun is still shining here, so it is really the sunny southeast today. The lamb having a nice stretch in the distance. So surrounded here by, I suppose, sheep that they're a sheep breed that you wouldn't see that commonly maybe in Ireland. The Romneys, originally from Romney Marsh in Kent, aren't they, from the British coast, and then the New Zealanders developed them on. And I remember when I was in New Zealand, they were a very common sheep breed or cross.
That's right, Noel. Yeah, exactly. I would have seen him now. We were on honeymoon actually in New Zealand there in 2016, Noel. That's where I would have seen him first. We got a camper van there and we drove around the south and the North Island. So,
what camper van? You're fairly tall now, I'd say. You were had it a big cab. Your legs are long.
We were in winter. It was winter time out there, Noel, now, and I had sore toes on it, that's for sure. Yes, I had to open the back door to let him out.
It's pretty windy on the North Island there in places. But it's a fantastic country, in fairness.
It is lovely country.
Yes, they're very common sheep breed out there. You wouldn't see that many of them in Ireland, I suppose. They're very, what I would have seen when I was in New Zealand was that they were very hardy. I suppose they're generally stay fleshy and they have a good fleece wool.
That's right, Noel. Yeah, absolutely. Like, there is pros and cons, I suppose, to every breed. But I just said I'd try them. As I say, we've seen them out there. I was chatting to a few farmers that had them, and I suppose they were hearing of the hardship I was getting with my mixed flock over here. And I said, sure, try a few of them and see. So we sourced a few, Noel, and we brought some in from the UK and that there. And there was a good bit of paperwork now involved, Noel, and blood testing and TB testing, that type of thing, but we sort of built it on from there then, you know.
And you're using these, as I said, I suppose the advantage of your tillage operation is you have the cover crops in and you can graze the sheep then nearly all winter on these crops.
That's right, yeah, exactly. I suppose a mistake, I suppose, Noel, to be honest, which I would have made in the back end last year and early on this year in January, February, the cover crops grew better than normal. It was a nice mild winter, to be fair, and all, wasn't it? You know, so I wouldn't have got much hardship. I think the ewes got into too good a condition, which worked totally in reverse and all. And I got a bit of trouble at the start of lambing here. Possibly my own bad management. I think I left them a little bit long on it and all. They got in way better condition than they should have been in. And there was a little bit of trouble at lambing at the very start and a bit of prolapse and that type of thing.
They're a breed that's inclined to be fleshy anyway.
They are. They're a heavy breed and all.
Where do you go with the lambs then? Where are you selling them? Are you finishing them for meat?
Yes. The market here, I suppose, is Noel. We do finish a certain amount for meat. We go ICM, the factory is only in Camolin here. It's only about 10 minutes away, which is very handy. We do sell.
I'll send you now a nice sponsorship baseball hat now for mentioning them.
Yeah.
And I'll be waiting. A body warmer used to be called a body warmer, and I now notice that there's no such thing as body warmer now, it's a gilet.
We have to get up to speed.
So you can send on Pat, or Patrick, I should say. You should send on Patrick now a nice cap and a gilet, ICM gilet now.
Thanks, Noel. I'll let you know if I get it. Yeah. But as I say, all the yo lambs, then we usually sell those for breeding. I might sell them privately to a farmer a lot of the time, Noel, because there is quite a good interest in it now all over the country, to be honest, which even without even advertising, I seem word of mouth in that it seemed to be easy enough to sell them privately to farmers. And then we'd sell a number of rams for breeding as well.
And you know, I'd say you'd never put a hand on a Romney on their back there and that they'd be thin with it. They're nearly always fleshy, are they?
Very, very seldom now and all, unless there was maybe another underlying problem or whatever. But they are always very fleshy. Sometimes we just throw them into the scales if there's an unusually big one and all to see what weight they're weighing and that. And oftentimes it'd be well over 100 kgs, you know, they're a big enough animal. Yes.
And looking up on the hill here, what crops have we above us here on the hill, Pat?
Yes, looking up on the hill here and all, we have some Planet Spring Barley as well. That's destined for the Malton barley. I suppose that's in an ideal situation, that's where it's ending up. If not, it's going to the feed heap. And just over it there is the feed beans. Just on the very top of the hill there, you might see them there and all. So okay,
that's where we're heading next anyway.
That's where we're heading.
Okay, yeah. We're off to the sheep here, lovely. And the sun is shining. We're in a totally different looking kind of a plant, I suppose, up here than what we've been looking at. So we're in the beans here. This is your protein crop.
That's correct, yeah. We're in, there's 18 acres of beans here in this field. And I hadn't sowed beans, I suppose, Noel, since about 2018, I think it was. It was that dry year and all. So it's the first year now I've sown them since then. Not that I really fell out with the crop, Noel. It's just that with rotation, you need a 5-year minimum rotation for beans. Just to, I suppose, Noel, because of cross infection and different things like that. So,
disease pressure builds up, I suppose, in the soil, is it?
Exactly. Yeah, and you're more inclined then to get other problems, Noel. So,
and the type of beans people are growing in Ireland, so they are protein crops, sure, people would know anyway, but the beans you're growing will be destined for what? Animal feed?
Animal feed, exactly. Yeah, they're quite high in protein, Noel. I think they're in around maybe 28% protein, like, so they're very high protein. You get a grant there from Europe at the moment for growing them. They're trying to push more people to grow, as you know, Noel, protein crops, like, you know.
Because obviously we're importing a lot of proteins into this country.
Absolutely.
From the likes of South America and everything else, and I suppose
it's a bit more.
Yeah, it would make more sense if we could.
Yes, absolutely. A little bit more self-sufficient, Noel. And
but then if we have the sunshine and everything else, which we don't always have, I suppose, which is another problem, isn't it? We can't really grow soya in this country as such. Not really, Noel. People have attempted it, but and same in the UK, it's a bit hit or miss, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely, Noel. Yeah, no, I think, in fairness, the bean, I think, is quite suited to our type of climate. And another big benefit, I suppose, is Noel, it can fix its own nitrogen from the air. And so this would have got no nitrogen whatsoever.
So if we kneel down here onto the ground and we can see, so it's a long kind of a stiffish, very stiffish plant, isn't it, standing up well?
It is, Noel, yeah.
And
there's quite a good, let's see, can we get it now? That one's after sort of breaking off, Noel, but there's quite a good root structure on it there, Noel. You know, at the minute now, it's quite clean there as well. There's probably a little bit of chocolate spot setting into it. This crop now, I'm hoping this will be sprayed later on today here, just to keep it like that, Noel.
Now, you've probably mentioned already, since we've been here, you've mentioned spray and inputs a good bit. So obviously people will have gathered that the crops you're growing here are requiring a good bit of, or they're getting anyway, a good lot of inputs. Whatever. So I suppose the question people might be asking is, why are you would have to heavily fertilise your crops. Fertiliser has gone very expensive this year, as there are a lot of inputs. And I suppose people have advised some of the grassland farmers a bit to cut down on their use of fertiliser and everything else. But you can't really scale back in your system on your crops, because it's costing you similar money, I suppose, to plant them, no matter what you do. So you need to maximise the harvest, don't you?
Very true, Noel. Yeah, absolutely. Now, like, I suppose I am definitely trying all year on year to scale back a little bit on it, if I can, if it's not going to hamper yield, I suppose. So I am using more organic manures here. As I say, we've been working towards that now for the last number of years, because I suppose the sheep is one example. Now they're playing a good part, Noel, in grazing the cover crops here and then refertilizing the ground. So you can pull back on your artificial fertilizers. Also, I have some cattle here on the farm, Noel, so I'd use that dung and slurry, I suppose, on the tillage area as well. And my wife, Mairead, now her dad and mam have a chicken business. So we do a little bit of barter as well, Noel, and I get my hands on some of the chicken manure as well.
You import that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, Noel. So all that is definitely feeding into Noel, cutting back a bit on artificial fertilisers, but definitely I still think there's a place for them, Noel. I think if we possibly, in my opinion, if we're all to go organic, we just wouldn't be able to produce like, you know, what we're producing. And I think there is definitely a time and there's a place for it, definitely, but we just couldn't all go organic.
Yeah, you're talking like if you were to go, say, grow your barley organically or whatever else, you'd probably be talking what, a little bit less than, with 40% maybe, would that be right? Or less even than what your tonnage per acre, would it be right or wrong on that?
Yeah, no, I'd say you're very right on that, Noel. And I'm far from an expert on organics, like, but I do have a few friends in that area, like, and stuff, and they definitely get a lot more per ton for what they're producing, but they're producing very small amounts, like, and... Like, to be fair, I think I can speak for a lot of farmers here. Like, we certainly don't like putting out chemicals and all. It's very, very expensive. And it's another job we have to do and different things. But
people might have an image of that you're out every day, horse and stuff out onto the... But that's not really there. I mean, you're thinking about everything. And especially with the cost of everything. So you're looking at everything. You're walking the crops like we're doing this. So you're really thinking about what you're...
I totally agree with you, Noel. Absolutely. And... it's just gone way more specialised than it used to be, Noel, and you have to be really on top of your game if you need to, if you want to make profits, like, you know, and make a living from it, really.
Yes.
So we're putting out exactly what the crop needs, and I just see there now, Noel, with a lot of new technology out there. I certainly don't have it all, but I'm definitely trying to get up to speed a little bit more with it there now. We do have the fertiliser spreader, Noel, that has its weight cells and it calibrates itself on the move and that.
Yes.
And you're just trying to put out exactly what you need rather than just putting it out for the sake of putting it out, you know. Also there, Noel, I'm starting just to chat to other, I'm in a few discussion groups and that, and chatting to other like-minded farmers as well, and getting advice from agronomists and from lads in Chagask and that type of thing. But I suppose we're trying to use more nutrients and maybe some biostimulants and that type of thing, Noel, to keep the crop healthy. And I suppose it's like me or you, Noel, if we're run down a bit, you know, you can relate, Noel, you have sheep. Like, if it's a lambing time of the year, say, and you're up day and night and that, you're more inclined to get a bit run down, I think it's fair to say, and all, maybe get cold sores, and I suppose your antibodies are not as strong as they should be.
Yeah.
It's the same with a crop. The healthier you can keep it, the less likely, I suppose, it is, Noel, to pick up some of these infections and disease and that type of thing, which in turn is cutting down on a lot of chemical use. So... just trying to get the crops healthier and all, and I suppose in turn then we can be cutting down a bit on our artificial chemicals and that type of thing, you know.
And we're looking around, I suppose we were talking earlier how maybe free draining the soil is around this part of the country. We can see, I suppose, even looking at the soil, it's a nice colour, and you have an awful lot of small little stones in it, which usually indicates free draining, doesn't it? To say you have an awful lot of small little, very small little, would you even call them
absolutely
pebbles there through it? Like even this ground towards our ground at home, your ground here is very dry and smart. We can see I'm in a pair of shorts here and the boots are as dry as, like, the ground there is. Look how dry the ground is.
It is all, yeah. Like the Sahara nearly.
We've had a fair bit of rain. Well, we have on our side up till a couple of days ago.
Yeah, and we would have had now, Noel, as well, a nice drop of rain here, you know, but the ground is very forgiving, as you can say. As you can see, maybe too forgiving at times. That's our problem.
Yeah.
I went out on a whim a little bit here. It's probably it's a little bit of a risk, Noel, what I'm after doing here, sowing beans on this field. It's quite high, as you can see, and very free draining. If you got a very, very dry summer, Noel, it can definitely eat into your yield a little bit, you know, with drought or whatever else. So I just have to keep a close eye on this, and I use some Magfus K on it. It's just basically it's a feed, and I'll be putting in another bit of feed in with the next chemical it's getting, just to try and keep the root system going, Noel, in case of drought.
Patrick, you haven't always worked here at home on the farm. Did you make a conscious decision to come home and farm here? It's a lovely area looking around, but did you make an actual conscious decision to come home here and farm? Like, we're two lads standing here now, the Ukrainian war is not a million miles away, and we're standing here in the sunny field in the sunshine of Wexford, so we're lucky enough, even though the price of everything has gone mad. So on a day like today, it looks rosy enough, albeit finances are stretched this year. Did you always want to come back and farm eventually full time, or did you fall back into it kind of accidentally?
Yeah, it would have been always the goal of mine, Noel, and it was always my end My end plan was always to come back to Farum. Yeah, definitely. I would have went to Ag College when I finished my Leaving Cert with a few friends around here, and I spent a year down there in all, and 9 month placement on a farm. And my mum and dad were alive that time. Unfortunately, now they've both deceased since, but they were alive that time, so they were farming the home farm. And I would have went to Dublin that time, and I worked in Roadstone there in Belgar. There I did a 4-year apprenticeship there to be a construction plant fitter, so I qualified at that there and all. And I suppose my dad was getting on a little bit there. He was getting a bit more elderly that time, and his health was deteriorating a little bit, so I possibly would have maybe stayed in Dublin for another few years and all, and maybe got another few bob together and that.
Had you a penthouse apartment on the Liffey?
No. No, I definitely hadn't. No. Penthouse apartments was my Volkswagen Golf driving up and down. So, no, I was doing a lot of commuting. And as I say, I did have an uncle lived up there at the time as well. So I used to stay there with him maybe a couple of nights a week and that. But I used to try and get back home because things were quite busy that time. The boom was here and I was working some nights that time. And I used to try and help out a bit on the farm then maybe during the day and that type of thing. I was younger, I was able to do it. So, as I say, there's family commitments there now and different things. But
when you come out the door here in the morning, you have about, 10 or 12 yards and you're in your business there now. So you're very lucky, aren't you? No, when you see people, and there is a lot of people commuting from this side of the door up there. What is it, the motorway there and the coming up there? It used to be the N11, was it?
That's right.
The Wexford one coming up to Dublin. Right. So you have people there commuting. A lot of commuters come up from Wexford every day into Dublin City, don't they?
True.
It's tough going, isn't it?
It is very, very tough going. And I suppose, Noel, it's like what older people would have said to me, and I wouldn't have really probably agreed with them until I did it myself. But oftentimes, maybe you'll agree, Noel, you have to go away to appreciate what you have at home.
Yes.
And I suppose I would advise any young person, Noel, if they have the opportunity to work off farm for a while, see what it's like, and then come back and appreciate what you have, I suppose, is the takeaway message I took from that. And, it wasn't all really in vain either, Noel. I picked up, I suppose, a bit of a trade that I'm not necessarily using at the moment, but I can do a lot of my own repairs. And we made up a grain trailer here during the pandemic, the COVID there, because we had a bit of spare time.
The beauty of farming always is that you could be doing anything, really. You could do 10 different tasks in the day. It's mad, isn't it? You could be welding, or you could be doing a bit of electrical repair. There's always something different, isn't there? Or some curveball thrown at you.
I agree with you, Noel. Yeah, I think you have to be a bit of a vet in you. You need to be
It looks like a good job today, anyway, with the sunshine and downness. Somebody, what's their vision of apart from the old corn stalk in the corner of the mouth, the combine rolling down in July or August is nearly the image everyone thinks of, isn't it?
That's true.
And do you remember I often thought it looks the most satisfying job. It probably is on a nice day, but it looks the most satisfying job when you see the header going in there to collect the crop. And I always thought it must be a real satisfying feeling there. Would you agree or not?
Yeah, I suppose that's the harvest day is the day you're living for, really, isn't it? You know, that's especially if you're predominantly tillage, which I am here. It's, you know, all your eggs are in that basket, really, and there is definitely a feel-good factor to it, you know. Especially when things look good, which I'm nearly afraid to say it, but crops are looking good this year, and it's a lovely feeling to be sitting in that combine, I suppose, driving down the stroke there. And
You need, in this part of the country, you need a good wet May, I suppose.
We do. We definitely do, Noel. Yeah, we need a good wet. That's very, very true. Yeah, absolutely.
And when you're... I presume you remember the first time you were in a combine, do you, when you were a child? You probably do.
Oh, I do, yeah. My uncle used to do a lot of harvesting here. I actually only bought my own combine about 3 years ago. We never had a combine here. So, it's a Deitz combine now. It's compared to the contractor's machines nowadays, it's really, you know, it's an old machine enough, but it's a high capacity enough machine all for its age, I suppose. And it definitely does the job here, you know.
But it's an investment, like in hours in the year, it wouldn't be doing many hours at all, wouldn't it?
Not at all, Noel. No, absolutely. Like, it's only going for what, really, when you add the whole thing up, maybe between all crops, 2 weeks possibly, if you get the weather. So it's the thing there, Noel, that you don't see moving around very often.
Sitting in the shed 50 weeks of the year.
Yeah. But by God, those 2 weeks are very important.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So it's great to have it. It's a thing I possibly wouldn't do without now at this stage, because you can cut your crop when you want to cut it.
You're independent.
Yeah. And maybe it's a blip. We hope it's a blip. But we're, because of the war and stuff, where fuel prices, as you know, are at and all at the moment, I have heard a few different horror stories, but I'd imagine it's going to be quite expensive to get an acre of barley cut this year because where fuel prices are at. And like those combines are guzzlers, like, you know, so
it has to be.
It has to be, yeah. I've heard of even, like, you know, I hope I'm wrong, Noel, but I've heard the price has been thrown around like €70 per acre to get it harvested, which would be
He's going to be very disappointed now when I tell the 9-year-old at home that you haven't this self-drive GPS drive and all this.
No, I haven't got that.
So you actually have to steer it with your hands.
I don't have the auto steer, unfortunately, on this one. No.
You got air conditioning.
She has air conditioning. She's a 1991 machine, though, right. So she's old.
Very good. So Patrick, we're here now. We're out of the sunshine. We're in under a sycamore tree here, and we're here with your, we're calling my herd anyway, of Aubrex, and they're lovely looking cattle. I suppose they're kind of palish, with kind of black points. People might notice they're French breed originally.
That's correct. Yeah, it's a very, very small herd, as you can see. No, we just have two of them here. My brother Andrew as well quite likes them, so we just said we'd. Just for a bit of a hobby, I suppose, and all, and see how it works out. We possibly could expand a bit, all right, but we bought 2-in-calf heifers, purebred heifers there, so we'll see how it goes. They're after having a bull and a heifer calf, so there's a local dairyman have eyed out the bull calf already, so we'll see how that goes and all.
And you have you're rearing some bucket reared calves here as well, so they'd be just calves born from local dairy herd.
Correct, yeah, exactly. From a local dairy herd here, we bought about 25 there and all. Bit of a mixed bag on it, but we reared them ourselves there just with milk powder in the shed here. We have a little bit of a setup here for doing that. We used to contract rear there for a number of people, and as I say, we still have the facilities there to do it, so we just said we'd use it and all, and we have a small slatted unit here as well, so we said we'd utilise what we have, you know.
Yeah, because the organic manure, you couldn't have enough of it, I suppose, on a tillage farm anyway. And I suppose to explain what contract rearing is, if people are wondering, is I suppose some dairy herds, in order to allow them to carry more milking cows, they'll contract rear out the young stock and bring them back into calf then for their first year in milk. And that's...
Yes, exactly. We were a little bit different in the fact that we were bringing in both bulls and heifers, and once they were weaned off the milk powder, they took them back rather than... We weren't using up our land bank, you know. So it was a little different in that respect. A lot of the farmers just didn't have time, or maybe have the patience or whatever.
Or labour
units, exactly, to rear their own. So, as I say, we had two sheds penned out there, pens of 10, and we were able to take, I suppose, up to 180 calves. And then, as I say, the farmer then would come back and bring him the rest of the way then, you know.
And this hill in the background here, what's the name of this hill?
Yeah, this is Ballycadden all across here. As you can see, that's all the wind turbines, that's Ballycadden Wind Farm. There's a number of farmers involved in that. So, as I say, unfortunately, I suppose, we've no hand actor part in that now, but it seems like it's running fairly well. It's there about, I suppose, 12 or 13 years now at this stage, you know.
And the house you grew up in is just back up here. We're going up to it in a minute. And I'm just looking at you there. You're leaning very relaxed in the gate. Is it true or false that tillage farmers spend a lot of time leaning on gates? Would that be?
That could be the case. Now, unfortunately, I'm not. I'm a mixed farmer, so I don't get as much time for that now. But
driving multi-million euro combines.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, yeah. I haven't moved to that level either now and all. But someday.
You're not
someday.
At the Jeremy Clarkson level yet. Anyway.
Not quite. No, not quite.
Right, we'll cruise up along here. We're in the farmyard there, Patrick. You would have grown up, though, just in the little house above us here.
That's correct, Noel. Yeah, we grew up here. I have one brother, Andrew, and two sisters, Annette and Mary. We would have grew up here with my mum and dad, Andy and Nancy. Both of them, unfortunately, now have passed there in recent times. My mum last year and my father in 2017. So the house is unoccupied now, as you see, Noel. But either later this year now or early next year, Noel, the plan is now we're just going to put a new roof on it, and we'll possibly then rent it out then, Noel, at that stage, because I think if it's left too long idle or derelict, if you like, Noel, it'll just get into worse repair and that type of thing, you know. So
it's a typical old she would have grown up here in the yard here. She's the typical old farmhouse here in the yard.
True, absolutely, Noel. Yeah, absolutely. Like, it would be, you know, as you can see, Noel, it's quite a small house and that, but there was four of us reared here now and all, and we were quite happy and comfortable in it, you know. But I suppose, look at everything now has gone bigger, isn't it? Families have gone smaller and houses have gone bigger, isn't it? It's just the way it's gone.
What does that tell you about the modern generation? You would wonder slightly, wouldn't you? The older generation were afraid of debt, and the younger generation are not afraid of it.
It's very, very true and all, isn't it? Absolutely. Look at them, possibly look at them. Guilty of it, probably myself, like everybody, but we're just... possibly maybe living above our means, you know, at times, you know. And but look, that's it. As I say, they've probably seen more hard times through that generation of people, Noel, wouldn't they? They would have been through more depressions, if you like, and maybe war times and stuff. So they would have seen both ends of it, I suppose. And they just hadn't as much access to money either. It wasn't as easy got, I suppose.
Yeah, we couldn't have picked a better day, really, I suppose, Patrick. So it's lovely to see. It's lovely to see what you're doing here, and thanks very much for showing me around.
Yeah,
it was lovely. No. And best of luck with your harvest.
Thanks very much, Nolan. Thanks very much for calling down as well. I took a lot from it there as well. Yeah, so thank you.
Yeah, you did. I even wore the shorts, especially. There you have it.
I was very lucky.
Yeah. Well, you have the New Holland. Yeah. You've been listening to Out the Gap, the Irish Food and Farming Podcast. If you'd enjoyed this podcast, please let your friends know and subscribe. Thanks very much, and talk to you on the next one.